Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, blood, sweat, and data. By the official travel agency of Babbittville, that's Premium Plus Sports. By USA-SwimRun.com, if you haven't grabbed a buddy and tried a swim run event, give one a try. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, as last year we sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest has a fascinating backstory. Her name is Kirsty Ennis. Kirsty, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am wonderful. First of all, how does somebody at the age of 17 decide that she wants to go into the service? That seems way too young.
Yeah. Well, I was actually really lucky to be raised by two Marine parents. So I grew up my whole life wanting to follow in their footsteps and just do something bigger than myself. I went with my high school requirements done early. At 15, started college, did 2 years of college, and at 17, decided I was pretty bored, and it was time to leave and join the Marine Corps.
You graduated high school at 15?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're one of those underachievers, huh?
Something like that.
That's amazing. So what were your sports before you got into the Marines?
Growing up, I played, I'm from the South originally, so growing up, I played a lot of the team sports. My big one was softball, did a little bit of volleyball, I was, again, really lucky to be raised by amazing parents that pretty much supported me in whatever sport that I wanted to try. So I did everything from gymnastics to taekwondo and the whole nine.
So, but when you told your parents you were going into the Marines, you told them you were getting a desk job.
Oh, yeah.
And what were you really doing?
Lied through my teeth to get my dad to sign, especially. My mom really said good riddance, but I ended up being a helicopter door gunner and a mechanic.
Helicopter door gunner. I mean, that has to be one of the scariest things there is. Is that what part of the attraction was?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I've always been pretty attracted to all things adrenaline. I wanted something that was actually going to challenge me and something that I was completely unfamiliar with. And, quite frankly, I had nothing to do with aviation growing up, and I've always been fascinated by it.
So 6 years in, and was there a point during that first 6 years where you were thinking, gosh, this was a mistake, I should have taken the desk job, or did you love it all?
I honestly loved it all. Don't get me wrong. I think everybody has those moments where it crosses our mind of like, was this the right choice? This is miserable. This is awful. You grin and bear it and you look to the people to your left and your right. You realize why you joined in the first place. Again, for the greater good. And yeah, I think we all had our bad days, but the people that I was in the Marine Corps with made it worth it.
So Afghanistan, June 2012, what happened?
It was a pretty routine mission. I had done flight plans the same way, tens, dozens, and dozens and dozens of times over. And it should have been pretty routine, but we were actually doing a combat resupply mission. And then we were meant to be going to extract a unit of Marines that had gotten into a pretty sticky situation. And unfortunately, my helicopter went down right outside of forward operating base in Azad. And I suffered some pretty extensive injuries, everything from a traumatic brain injury to spinal cord damage, my arms, my ears, my eyes, and then I also lost my left leg above the knee.
Well, and also your teeth were on one side of your head, your right side of your face, jaw was gone.
Oh, yeah. I had full thickness facial trauma, so I had to have basically facial reconstruction of the entire right side of my face. Expensive.
Wow. But you feel that the Army medic saved your life?
Yeah. We were actually transporting three space-available Army medics, basically threw him on last minute in the fuel pit because we needed to get from point A to point B. So we were essentially acting as a taxi and threw these guys in the back of the aircraft. And one of the gentlemen, I mean, he stayed in my face and just kept me out of shock and kept me in it. You know, I had guys on the plane sitting there screaming at me and telling me to not close my eyes because I wouldn't open them again.
Wow. And you couldn't take pain meds because of the damage to your brain, right?
Yeah. So due to all of the head trauma, normally they'd give you a morphine lollipop or something along those lines. But because of everything that had happened to my head, they didn't know how I would react or, you know what the outcome would be if they gave me too many meds. So kind of had to just grin and bear it and ride it out 30 minutes back to Camp Bastion.
Wow. And a total of 38 surgeries?
44.
44 now. Oh, my God. 44 surgeries.
Yeah.
When you're going through all of that, because I'm sure you during these surgeries and everything, you're on different medication. What was the lowest point of all this for you?
I really credit my my family to getting me through everything that I've been through, but also my command in the hospital. I don't know if they were giving me false hope, or maybe they truly believed it too. But for a while throughout my recovery, I was being told that, you know what, we're going to fix you up and you're going to go back to being on active duty. And I really rode that wave of being optimistic that I was going to go back. And then after going through the medical board process to be found fit for duty, I was found unfit for duty a few times. And I finally got to the point of where they said, you're done. And once they said that I was going to be medically retired, it was a rough patch. Joining the Marine Corps at 17 years old, that's all to a point. But then when you live and breathe the Marine Corps or bleed green,
right.
That was my purpose. That's what I wanted to do for the next 20 years. So I felt pretty lost. My recovery went downhill for a while there. And, I struggled, mentally and emotionally. It was a much harder battle than it was physically.
Well, and the hard part is you're part of something so special. It's like the ultimate fraternity, sorority. And then they're not necessarily throwing you out, that's the way you feel, right? You feel like, okay, I'm not going to be with the people I care the most about anymore. That was the hardest part, I'm guessing.
Yeah, following your pride and being like, okay, I have to start over, it was difficult. But then also, when you've been in for, not that it's a long time, but when you've been in for that long, the people that you're surrounded by, the people that you deploy with, the people that you're injured alongside, the people that you grow with, they become family. And so when you have that realization of, you're getting out and you're losing that brotherhood and that team that you've, spent the last 6 years building. It's difficult. I mean, you go back to, not knowing who you can trust or who you can relate to really talk to and process your trauma with. There's just a huge amount of loss when it's all said and done.
When did you, because when I look at everything you've accomplished, doctorate in education, master's of public administration, master's MBA, master's human behavior, and then everything you've done as an athlete, which came first? Was it, I'm going to immerse myself in school or I'm going to immerse myself in sports?
Actually, school. So I've always been like a sponge, and I just wanted to know more, and I want to know how things work and what makes certain things successful. And the whole time I was in the Marine Corps, I was going to either night school or classes on the weekend. And before that deployment that I was hurt on, I was actually like a year away from getting my first master's degree. And when I got hurt and I got sent back, obviously, to the hospital stateside, I was broken. Physically, I was broken, so I wasn't going to be able to go out and do anything athletic really for a while. But then also, emotionally, I felt like I lost myself and I was struggling. So I really wanted to preserve what was left of my mind, even though, like I said, I had a pretty nasty traumatic brain injury. And I went to my doctors and asked basically for their permission or approval to get tuition assistance to be able to go back to college. And at first they kind of laughed at me and they're like, there's no way. Like, you're not going to pass your classes. You're struggling so much with word recognition and retrieval and memory and all these things that it's just not going to happen. And by them telling me it's not going to happen, I basically said, to hell with you. I'm going to figure this out. I'm not going to say they were great grades, but while I was laying in my hospital bed, I actually finished my first master's.
Wow. This is from a woman who at that point, you knew they were your family, but you didn't remember anything about them. You had to relearn pretty much everything.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a long process and, it's every day. I mean, to this day, I still go to speech therapy and cognitive therapy and occupational therapy. But I truly believe if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. I'm going to make my brain and my body work to the best of my abilities and until they put me on my real deathbed. So
and then snowboarding, right? Snowboarding,
yeah.
The gold 2018 Paralympics. That gives you a nice goal to go at. What got you into snowboarding? Or is that something you were doing before?
No, I'm originally from Florida.
Not much snowboarding there. Yeah. Except the sand dunes there, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. No, there was an organization that approached me when I was in the hospital and basically just said, how do you feel about learning a winter sport? And at that point in time, I just wanted to get the heck out of the hospital.
Right.
So I said, absolutely. Just get me out of here. And, when I showed up to this event in Breckenridge, Colorado, nobody had asked me what I was medically cleared to do.
So right.
I said snowboarding, because in my mind, that's cool, right?
Exactly, yeah.
I ended up just falling in love with it. And it was something that, the same thing with me climbing my mountains and everything. Like, it's a sport that no one can do for you. People can help you along the way and teach you certain skills, but no one can snowboard for you. And that was just this huge reminder of, of how much I'd fought to stay out of a wheelchair, battling through your recovery. I mean, just in my opinion, a pretty pure representation of our resiliency. And it was empowering. And that just segued into everything else.
Well, and speaking of everything else, then it becomes, maybe I'll be a stunt woman. Maybe I'll try to summit the highest peaks on all seven continents. So the doctors are basically telling you, you're going to be able to maybe go down a slip and slide. You're going to be able to walk down the street. And you're going, no, I want to summit the highest peaks on all seven continents. Talk a little bit about when that came into your head and how far along in that journey are you?
Yeah. Again, snowboarding introduced me to the mountains. And when I decided that racing wasn't enough, I loved competing. I really did. But that was essentially just a stepping stone. I decided that I really wanted to get into more of like the backcountry type things and then climbing the mountains and snowboarding down. And I just kind of spread like wildfire. Again, something I got basically addicted to. The first peak that I did was just Kilimanjaro, the highest point in Africa, back in March of 2017. And every step of the way, you suffer.
Right.
It is miserable. But when you get to the top, it is just this amazing feeling. And that 30 seconds of an amazing feeling makes it all worth it. And again, just reminds you of the fight that you actually have. I just kept going. And I've done Karstens down in Indonesia, so the highest point in Oceania. I've done the highest point in Europe. I've attempted the highest point in North America, better known as Denali. And actually next month, I climbed the highest point in South America, followed by Everest.
Wow. So is it Aconcagua? Is that?
Yep.
Wow. And that's at what height? What elevation are you at?
Just over 22,000 feet.
And what's the highest you've been so far?
Oh, geez. 19,340.
Oh, what the heck? What's 3,000 feet? That's no big deal.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, during this time, you have had a number of friends who, from PTSD, have committed suicide. And you know, we see that all the time, that people look at somebody and go, oh, he looks okay. She looks okay. She must be fine. What have you found from dealing with PTSD and how brutal that is?
You know, there's just this huge misconception about healing within a hospital or thinking that there's going to be this happy pill. And the reality is it doesn't happen overnight. Like, it is going to be a miserable, uncomfortable process. But if you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. You're never going to get past this trauma that you've experienced. And I honestly, like, I can't urge, you know, I can urge everybody, I mean, beyond belief, just to go out and try something new. You know, it doesn't, just something so out of your wheelhouse that it will give you the confidence to go out and try anything. And that's what sports did for me. You know, I suffered in a hospital with mental health for 2 years and tried every medicine, tried every form of therapy, all, you know, the experimental stuff or EMDR, and it just didn't work. And finally, I decided to turn to what was right in front of us, the outdoors. I think all too often we get caught up in front of our screens or what have you, and we don't spend time outside. And, I mean, that worked for me. Or even just, like, working out, doing something athletic, moving, releasing endorphins, you know, the natural things that we've gotten so far away from. You know, I can't urge people enough.
When you're in the midst of training for Aconcagua, how do you have to adapt to the fact that, well, you're missing a leg, you've got shoulder injuries, you've got spinal issues? How do you have to adapt? What is your equipment that much different than anybody else would use?
There's been a lot of trial and error with the mountaineering stuff. Ironically, I mean, we fabricate my own crampon feet, you know, things that you can't buy, you know, as a normal amputee or, you know, through a typical prosthetist. Some of these things are riveted and welded in someone's shop, basically. And I've gone through a lot of different prosthetics trying to figure out what actually works for me. Now, I won't complain about being an amputee because I'm just thankful that I'm alive. But I would do nearly anything to get my knee back because a knee is an absolute game changer.
Yeah, the difference between being an above-knee amputee and a below-knee amputee is huge.
Yeah, it's rough. But yeah, I mean, you just got, like, again, even with dealing with the mental and emotional side of things, you just have to be patient with yourself and figure out what works for you.
So some of the other things, in November 2015, you spoke in Madison Square Garden. April 2016, stunt woman on Patriots Day, Mark Wahlberg. Talk a little bit about some of those amazing experiences. Then you're on the cover of the ESPN Body Issue in 2017. You've accomplished some amazing things in your life. And how have those things changed you and how'd they come about?
You know, the biggest thing is, I just believe in being hungry. You know, I don't compete with anybody but myself.
Right.
I want to be better than the person that I was yesterday. And that's just about it. I don't want to settle. I don't want to settle for mediocrity when I could have something great. So basically, yeah, again, it was just stepping stone. You know, whether it was baseline was Madison Square Garden, I just decided that I wanted more. And I was going to be willing to put my head and my heart in the game to keep pushing myself. And it all, like I still, I think it all ties back to snowboarding and trying something new that will give you confidence.
After Aconcagua, I mean, is the plan to, how many of the 7 summits do you have left? And is the plan to try to do as many of those in 2019 as possible?
Yeah, so after I do Aconcagua and Everest, I'll actually have a mountain down in Antarctica, and then I'll have Denali. So I should be done with the 7 summits in 2020, actually.
And if people out there would like to support you, because I'm assuming that this stuff is not cheap. You're talking about bringing yourself and probably others to a foreign country for, it's not like you go down there and go, okay, tomorrow we're leaving and we're going to climb Aconcagua. You've got to be down there and acclimatize and all the rest of that. How can people help you out?
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's a lot of work, a lot of time, energy, effort. And quite frankly, I do a ton of public speaking and appearances, and basically anything that I can to scrape together the money so that I can keep doing this. But yeah, if anybody out there wants to support me or to sponsor some of the climbs, definitely feel free to reach out to me on any of my social media platforms. It's just my name, Kirstie Ennis. Or you can even get a hold of me through my foundation's website, which is the Kirstie Ennis Foundation.
Very simple. Now, when you got injured and your parents are there in the hospital, and was there a point where they're like, man, why did you go into the service? Did they even have that conversation with you, or was that just too far in the past to even bring up?
Kind of, to an extent. So my father has been fairly tough on me most of my life, but yeah. I deserve it. I deserve every piece of it. And one of the first things my dad said to me, semi-jokingly in the hospital, was, I told you so. Because he was the one that I lied to about doing the desk job. Should have just done the desk job. But that was also the moment, you know, around that same time, that was, you know, my dad also told me that he was proud of me. So there's a balance in there. But, you know, I think my parents are proud. I think that they've hated watching me suffer for such a long time. But I think now that I've grown past all of that, I don't know, it's a pretty special thing. And like I said, I wouldn't have been able to do it without my mom, my dad, and my sister for sure.
Being a stuntwoman, is that something you want to do more of? And how much fun was that working on Patriots Day?
Stunts is a lot of fun, and I would absolutely do more. Again, you know, I'm always looking for the next thing to fill that void of, you know, the adrenaline junkie thing. You know, I went from doing a high-speed loop job in the military. So when you get out and you get out abruptly, it's kind of like, all right, well, how am I going to fill that gap now? And stunts is just a great, it gets you going quick.
I love it. And in terms of like workouts on a day-to-day basis, what type of things do you do to get ready for the altitude? You're in Colorado, so you're at some altitude, but do you do some high altitude camps to get ready?
So a lot of what we do is we do like, interval training at altitude. So if I am in the mountains or at altitude, obviously the best thing that I can do is just time in the saddle, you know, make my heart, make my body work, and make my body work up high. But while I'm on the road or while maybe I'm at sea level in San Diego working on prosthetics and stuff, I put a huge focus on just strength and conditioning, you know, being able to adapt to the loss of my leg and the loss of my leg so high. I have to compensate. The rest of my body works extremely hard. So to make sure everything's working the right way, and then also putting a huge focus on mobility because of the overexertion that I put my body through, you know, making sure that I'm doing some sort of like an active recovery at the end of the week is pretty huge too.
So toughest moment in the mountains so far for you?
Oh, man. toughest moment in the mountains? I don't know if it's just a moment, but when I was on Denali, I spent 17 days at 14,000 feet because a cyclone came in. So we were just getting beat up by just awful winter conditions. I mean, you would sleep for 90 minutes to get out of your tent to dig your tent out for the next 90 minutes. You know, I am just not a patient person when it comes to that kind of thing. So my biggest struggle has definitely been dealing with tent time and, you know, dealing with, I guess, recognizing that I'm not in control. You know, it doesn't matter how well prepared I am. The mountain's always going to have the last word.
Now, I noticed that you've obviously got a lot of tattoos. Do your tattoos tell a story, or are they just, something that happened all at one time or over a period of time?
They all tell stories, just from different moments in my life, for sure. I've hit extremely high highs and some pretty low lows, and, I love the fact that my tattoos can represent some of the things that I believe in and some of the things that I value.
I love it. Kirstie, thank you so much for taking time. Again, people can track Kirstie down at Kirstie Ennis, and you can check out her foundation, find her on social. Amazing, amazing backstory, and I love what you're doing now. What's the next degree you're going for?
I'm finishing up a doctorate in education on top of the 3 masters.
But I'm assuming there'll be something after that.
Yeah, probably. I don't know what I'd do with all that free time.
Exactly. Kirstie, thank you so much for taking time. It's a pleasure to get to meet you over Peter Harsh's place, and love what you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Kirstie Edis has been our guest again. We're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, by Velofix.com, by Polar Blood, Sweat, and Data, by Premium Plus Sports, USA-SwimRun.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've been around 25 years, sent out 23,000 grants to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.